Hello, hello. What's going on, everyone? It is I, Justin Redrick. We are here with another episode of the From Bars to Bitcoin podcast. Yes, I know it's been a big gap between the first one and the last one, or the last one and this one. But hey, we're going along as we go. And so on this episode of From Bars to Bitcoin, I want to bring the infamous J. Dan Gum. Make sure I said that correctly. J. Dan Gum. He is the founder of the Forgiven Felon Transitional Home in Dallas, Texas. And he's also a podcast host of the Background Check podcast. I met Jay in a very ironic way. We were on the email thread and we were supposed to go to Florida to do some reentry work. And Florida just took their old merry time, and we never got to go to Florida. And I believe Jay hit me up on the email and said, hey, you know, he said he noticed my name, Bitcoin V.
Yep.
And he said, I want to be able to talk to you about Bitcoin. So we met through an email thread, and we're going to get into the rest of how we met and stayed in touch and what came about. But without further ado, let me introduce everybody to J. Dan Gum. Jay, how you doing?
What's up, man? I'm glad to be here, bro.
That's what's up, man. I'm glad to have a podcast. I'm interviewing a podcast professional, so it feels good.
Yeah, man. Oh, man.
We finally got you on here. You know, we made it to Dallas. We'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah. You know, Jay, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your story and, you know, how you became J. Dan Gum. Where did it all start? Because I know you don't hide your background, so... Let us all know the spiel and who you are.
Yeah, man. Man, I am 53 years old, so I'm like, I could be your daddy, I think, because you're so young. but man, I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas. I've lived in some other states during my party years. Grew up in church. Did not really care for church. I was a black sheep of the family, rebel. And it was just like, I got kicked out of two private schools my sophomore year, my junior high years. I almost burnt the school down. I was just lashing out, man. When they changed us from one church and school to another church and school, I was so mad because I was ready to play football and the new school and church didn't have football. So I was mad. I began lashing out at my parents, hanging around friends that, you know, your parents always say, don't hang around little Johnny. They're a bad influence. I began seeking those people out. And, my high school years was just full of trouble. Went off to college, began continuing my drinking. I got involved in drinking and drugging, probably the summer before my sophomore year in high school. And I dropped out of college, you know, mainly because at that point in life, academics was too easy for me and I got bored. And when I get bored, I wanted to drink back then. So all I did was party, and I just dropped out of college, came back home, started working at a bar, and began to accumulate certificates from law enforcement. Like public intoxication and minor in possession. And, you know, then when I became 21, I graduated and took my master's degree and got some certificates called DWIs, driving while intoxicated. Ended up taking some whatever graduate courses, you know, And when people are sitting around talking about their college degrees, I'm like, I got three degrees. And I said, well, the way it reads is third degree felony, but, you know, it's still a degree, you know? So anyway, alcohol was my life and partying was my life. And, once I got that fourth and fifth DWI in Texas, they decided to send me to prison. And, you know, I just kind of fell into the prison game. You've been there. You know, there's certain things you can do to get involved in all the nonsense of prison and the gambling and the different things and the traffic and trading. And I got into all that, you know, and I didn't fall into a gang. I never got affiliated with a gang, but I started gambling. I was a good gambler. I love drinking. I love gambling. I was a good one, and I became a little bookie. Had my little parlay boards out, and so then I got into a fight, got locked up in solitary confinement, the whole administrative segregation, whatever it's called in every state, and spent 8 days there. Came out a new man. Came out with a new mindset. Faith is a big thing in my life, and in those 8 days I spent in the hole, I was able to grab onto my faith again and come out with a new mindset, new mentality, new outlook on life, new worldview. So I let myself become mentored by a couple of guys over the next year. They got out of prison and they were back in prison before I made parole. And that made me question, you know, did I pick the right mentors, first of all? You know, when your own mentors didn't make it, you kind of get scared. And I'd been in and out of jail all my life, but I'd never been in and out of prison. And prison was something I didn't want to be in and out of. I wanted to be out and stay out. And so when my own mentors came back in, I was like, man, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to make it out there? And so then I just started thinking, man, maybe I can create something on the outside that helps people get out and stay out and to find a new mindset like I did. And that's how the whole transitional house dream came alive, was in prison. So I began, you know, writing things down, and I began to figure out how I couldn't get all the answers from inside prison, but I tried to get as many as I could while I was still inside. I tried to find out as much information as I can. A lot of people in prison want to say, I'll wait till I get outside. I'll wait till I get out to start doing whatever, fill in the blank, yeah. You know, and I'm a proponent of do it now, you know, do it now, whatever you can do. And even our podcast goes into all the prisons and jails across the nation. You know, I tell them, look, whatever you think you want to do when you get out, start doing what you can do towards that right now. And so when I got out, we started the Forgiven Felons, DBA, not DBA, but just Forgiven Felons. Nobody else had that name, which was, you know, great. But we started the nonprofit. We opened the houses in 2012. We've been doing that now for right at almost 12 years. May will be 12 years. We've been doing the transitional house.
Wait, May when? What day in May?
May 1st.
Oh,
May
1st, okay. We started. That's dope. That's dope. I got out of prison in May 12th, 2014. May's a good month.
All right. Yeah. May's a good month. May's a good month. So, so we've been doing that now and for 12 years. And I've always wondered how I can help the guys more. We've done so many. There's a documentary out there called Forgiven Felons. You can watch it on Roku. You can look it up on YouTube. It's on Tubi TV. It's a great story. It's a 3-episode documentary of six of the guys that were in our program. It tells their story of how they got to prison and then how they came out. And they're all still very successful. All six of them and myself are still very successful. We've had a lot of success. We've had very few people go back. Our recidivism rate with over 300 men is at about 7%. So that's not bad. Way lower than any state or federal recidivism rate. So, you know, all these years I've just been like, how can I help these guys better? So we're actually about to start. We couldn't find a building, but we're starting in our, you saw that little guest house in the back on our property when you came.
Yes,
we're about to start classes in there, t-shirt, graphic art design, DTF printing, all this kind of stuff to help them towards their owning their own business. T-shirt shop, a t-shirt maker is one of the easiest things you can do as far as owning your own business. You don't even have to be the t-shirt maker. You just have to know somebody that can do your graphics and make your t-shirt. And you have a website, sell them, and I mean, I know guys that do $20,000-$30,000 in revenue a month, and they don't own a piece of equipment. Now it's nice to know, because you can be that person that owns the equipment and make money as well. But anyway, so we what's interesting is how my journey into Bitcoin started was from.
Let me before you get there, I wanted to ask you this. You know, what I mean, I wanted to say something to you because.
All right.
You shared a lot of great info, man. And, you know, the thing where you stated that you watched some of your mentors come back And that made you kind of, you know, kind of like doubt, like, you know, what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when, did you ever talk to him when you saw him?
I have not actually kept up with them.
Yeah, I mean, like when they came back in, did you talk to him? Did you ask him what happened?
Well, they weren't at our, at the unit that I was at. I was at, when they paroled and when they were with me, we were at a minimum security private prison. Mm-hmm. So when they came back in, there wasn't any way they were going to be working their way back up to that. Okay. So, from what I understand, they finally made it back out. I don't communicate with them that much, because, you know, you just have to kind of keep your distance from people that are not doing right. But I still listen every once in a while, listen to the Rumorville and see if I could figure out where they're doing, what they're doing. But that was the thing, you know, it scared me so much that I'm like, I don't even want to talk to them. I'm going to go off and do my thing and I'm going to become a mentor. And I'm going to do something they didn't do. But it also opened my eyes to see that, you know, a lot of people in prison, they talk a good game in prison. They act a certain way in prison. And there's two different types of people. When they get out, are you going to become a product of your environment? Or are you going to rise above? That's it. No matter where you go, even if you go to the worst, crappiest state-funded halfway house, which one of them did, or you go home to a family environment that's still maybe full of drugs and alcohol, which the other one did, are you able to rise above it? Because there's always a way to rise above something, okay, no matter what. You know, I told you, I'm a man of faith, so the Bible says there's no new temptation under the sun. That means from the beginning of time till now, everything that you could be tempted with to do wrong, it's already been. There's nothing new. But then the verse says, but with every temptation, I've made a way of escape. Mm-hmm. And so what that tells me is that no matter what gets thrown my way, there's a way to rise above that. And so that's what we teach people. No matter what comes your way, you can rise above and defeat whatever's trying to hold you back or get you to go back. And, you know, and so, so, yeah. You got any more questions before I move on?
Well, yeah, one last one, man. This was what you shared was very powerful, because when I would be in prison, I would hear people say, oh, you know, I went back to doing this. I went back to doing this. And I understood, like, you know, at the very core, just don't go back to, you know.
Right.
Not even if you can't not go back to your home. Don't go back to who you used to be, the environment, you know, because pressures do. They kick in, and once they kick in, and you start thinking, like, I can do this, so I'm smarter now than I was before, but you're the same dumbass criminal that got caught, you know?
So yeah.
They don't really teach you no way in prison how not to get caught again.
No, because they want you to come back.
Hell yeah, they got more beds for you anywhere in America. But
they
want something you
they
shared.
Want more.
Go ahead.
They want more of your family's money.
Yeah. They want all of your family. I met people whose entire generation. You know how you meet folks? My mom went to college, my dad went to college. It's the complete opposite. 70 years of prison, you know, and a generation. So they'll hold you down in there if they can. But before we go into the Bitcoin, I want you to share this, because you shared something that I think is very insightful. You shared it with me at Forgiving Felons. And I was aware of the 13th Amendment, but you also shared the part where the slaves were released and they created new laws. And you also shared the specific names of, like, the law or the crime that was put out there. So for people who are listening who probably don't understand, definitely don't understand, like, how deep it gets, could you go and share that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm not a history buff, but, man, you know, when it has to do with my personal life, when my personal life intersects with history, then I want to learn all about it. Mm-hmm. And when I started hearing about the 13th Amendment, all I knew about it up until, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, was that, you know, the slaves were free. You know, the slaves were free. Yoo-hoo! But because I did prison time, I need to read a little bit further down to that 13th Amendment, where it says that there's no longer slaves except for when you commit a crime and you become incarcerated. You are still a slave of the state.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, all right, I get that. And so what happened was when they let all the slaves go, when you have that mass parole, I mean mass parole, that mass release, number one, there ain't no homes for them. You're releasing all of them to homelessness because they have nowhere to go. All right. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, okay, everybody's on the street. You know, they can't. But because the way they wrote the law, the amendment, they said, except for incarceration. So now they're like, okay, well, how can we get all these slaves back? How can we get all this free labor back? How can we get all this stuff back? So they decided, they started, you know, well, we can't just have them live on the street. And they're not homeowners. They don't have the money to buy their home. So let's start saying, okay, well, now you can't do this. You can't be a vagrant. You can't loiter. You can't. So they start writing these laws, okay, kind of the same way they still do now with they try to write new homeless laws. You can't have encampments here. You can't set up tents there. So they started writing these laws so that these former slaves can be arrested. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're arrested, you fall under that incarceration clause under the 13th Amendment.
Right.
Now, because you're arrested, you can be a slave again.
Right.
So instead of being a slave to the state, what they do is they did convict leasing. Now, the prisons that incarcerate these former slaves, now these slaves are back in prison. Now, the prisons would lease the convicts back to the plantation owners where they originally worked.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like the plantation owners were like, okay, well, you know, we lost our slaves, but we got them back, you know,
make them work.
And and to this day, convict leasing still goes on. They call it, they try to dress it up with a different label, whatever. But, you know, we had an outside trustee crew from our unit that I was on that went and did work in the city, in the county, in different places. And, you know, it was all, the inmates weren't getting paid for it,
right?
You know, but the prison was getting paid for their inmates coming to do the labor.
Right.
And the prison was keeping the price low enough so that it was a deal for the city or the county or whatever. And so because of stuff like that, and because of all the money they make off these third party vendors from phone calls, video visitation, the tablets, everything, you know, tablets are great, but it's a moneymaker for the state and right. for the government. It's a moneymaker. Everything's a moneymaker. Because of that, because of the 13th Amendment and because of all the money, prison will never go away. No matter even if everybody's rehabilitated. Because again, if everybody's 100% of the prison population got rehabilitated right now and they let everybody out on parole, again, we'd have the same problem. A lot of these people don't have homes to go to. So they would be writing them up, arresting them, and sending them back. And so the system is created for us to be repeat clientele. I mean, as a business owner, you know, that's your goal, is to create repeat clientele.
Right.
And so every state and every prison owner, private or state prison, federal government, prison is a revenue. And the goal for any revenue generating company is to create repeat clientele. So then you set your processes and your systems up to try to get everybody to come back. So,
damn. For anybody listening, that's a hell of a mic drop on that topic. It helps you understand that no matter public or private, you're dealing with the way America was created. And America will never let go of its number one cash cow. And
it won't. You know, my kids they love this movie called Wonka, Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Wonka came out. And in that movie, the little black orphan girl said to Willy Wonka, because Willy Wonka was like, I don't know what's going on. And she said to him, the greedy beat the needy all the time, and that's just how our world works.
Yeah, damn.
The greedy beat the needy. Now, we're needy. When we go into prison, we're needy, but the greedy will beat the needy. And she said, that's just how our world works. But I like what he said. He said, well, then you know what we got to do? We got to change the world.
You know, that's a great way to say that, because what we're about to get into now is definitely changing the world.
Absolutely. That's why I said that, man.
It's a segue into how we're changing the world. So give us, you know, Jay Van Dam. I'm like, tell us how you came across Bitcoin, man. You know, because that workshop, the Transitional House, was magnificent, man. And
it was,
I'd love,
man,
to know, you know, that. Let the folks know how you came about it. You know, what made you even send that email, you know, because the damn sure wasn't me being vegan. So what happened, man?
So back in, I want to say 2014, maybe, or 15, one of those years, we got an inmate out, and he was trying to interstate compact to Florida, but he got denied. So he stayed there. He put down his roots, but his son lived here in Dallas. And so, he began the relationship with his son. It was kind of strained, you know, because he went to prison, but when he got out, I kind of helped him reconnect with his son. And then his son, he started telling me, he goes, "My son, man, he's doing something weird." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He's into this Bitcoin thing." And I'm like, "Well, what's Bitcoin?" I really didn't know. I think I may have heard the name mentioned, but I'm like, "Well, what is Bitcoin?" He goes, "Look, I don't know yet, but he's day trading Bitcoin." I'm like, "Oh, okay, all right." And I didn't really even know what day trading was at that point.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, "All right, well, that's cool." He's like, "I just don't know enough about it, man. I don't know how to even counsel him and tell him to either, you know, stick with it or get out of it. I don't even know, you know." And he says, "All I know, it's fairly new, and it's you know." And so anyway, that just kind of put that on the shelf. I've kept up with that resident over the years, okay? And this is kind of jumping ahead, but I've kept up with him. In the last few years, I've said, "Hey, how's your son doing? You know, how'd the Bitcoin thing work out for him?" And he goes, "Well, just last Christmas, he gave me an actual Bitcoin for a present." So I'm like, "Okay, he must be doing pretty good if he's giving Bitcoins away for a Christmas present." And so I'm like, "Okay," because, you know, 3 years ago, Bitcoin wasn't what it is now.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Well, then I want to say in 2000, maybe 18, I went down to Houston to catch up with not a former resident, but a former inmate I was locked up with who was in my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I went down and he goes, and I asked him what his son was up to. You know, because in prison, we'd always pray for his son. And his son's a young adult now at this point in 2018. And I said, "Well, how's Winston doing?" He goes, "Man, he's doing good." I'm like, "Well, what's he doing?" He goes, he's into crypto. I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He's into Bitcoin." I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "Okay." And then this is a few years after 2014, 15. So I'm like, "Okay, well," I'm like, "how's he doing it?" And he said the same thing. He said he's kind of day trading Bitcoin. I'm like, "All right." I'm like, "Well, is he doing good?" And he goes, "Well, every once in a while he comes up to me, shakes my hand. And when I let go of his hand, there's $1,000 in my hand." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's good. He must be doing good." And he goes, "When I ask him where he got it or, you know, whatever," he said, "just because of Bitcoin." And so I've learned all my knowledge about Bitcoin and how good it's doing have come from two inmates that were locked up and their son, you know, and their son. So then when I get on, I don't remember if you were on the original Zoom call we had with Cardell and Aaron.
I think I was.
I think that might have been when I first saw your Bitcoin vegan name. And then the fact that you were going into prison, then, you know, I knew you were like-minded, but at that point, I still didn't realize, you know, that you had been to prison and you wrote a book, Bars to Bitcoin, all that. but I knew at some point I knew you'd been to prison. That's when I, you know, the Bitcoin and the prison, that's when I knew, like, we got to get this guy on our show. And so you came on the audio podcast back in, I don't remember what year that was.
I think it was last year sometime.
Was it last year? Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was fun to learn a little bit from you and to almost go into prison with you. but then, you know, you start telling me about this, you know, about the Bitcoin transformation community and the nonprofit, and you know, you're getting funding to go into other prisons and stuff like that. And I'm just like, all right, man, well, we can start that conversation here in Texas, see if we can get you in Texas. But then you offered, you know, you said, well, what about your transitional house? Can we come do a workshop there? And I was like, okay, all right, yeah, come on, let's do it. And man, I'm telling you, dude, you have changed the lives of several of my people, you know, in this transitional house. You know, you, number one, you gave us so much good information. You gave me information just about cryptocurrency. I didn't realize how much difference there was between Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Yeah. And you spelled that out. You let us know that there was definitely a difference between Bitcoin and all other crypto. And that helped me as somebody who's, so that the last guy that I was in prison with, his son, after I learned what he was doing back in 2019, mm-hmm. is when I called his son, Winston, and I said, hey man, I said, I want to get into cryptocurrency. What do I need to know? And that was the guy I told you that said, it's a little late to get into the Bitcoin game. But he said, here's my other three, you know, XRP, Ethereum. Well, he said XRP and Ethereum at the time.
Hey, don't worry. So, we'll get that out once the good podcast goes live.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm playing with you. Go ahead, man.
but, you know, I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, probably he probably didn't even know any better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, at some point, even against his will or his information, I started just, you know, out of my account every week, or twice a month, I would take Bitcoin, Ethereum, and XRP. I've been doing that now for 3 years. And not a lot. It's not a lot. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit. Every twice a month, those three. But you will be glad to know that since the workshop, mm-hmm. I have taken what I've been given to Ethereum and XRP twice a month, and transferring that to adding more to my Bitcoin twice a month. So.
Hey, man, we did it. We did it, y'all. We did it. We did it.
But you gave so much information, and you broke it down so clear that even Dalton and Dakota, a husband and wife that just both got out of prison and jail and trying to get their life back on track, and both, you know, do not even have a very high education, you were able to answer their questions and allow them to comprehend it in a way that now they're both invested in Bitcoin. So,
you know, man, that was the greatest part of it, man, because, you know, walking up there to the house, I didn't realize you were that damn tall. Well, he's kind of tall, all right. But, you know, being there, you know, seeing everyone there and seeing everybody have the same look on their face like I did when I came home, is just like, you're an adult, but you still have that childlike face of like, you know, what the hell am I going to do?
Right.
And so then, you know, when we started talking about Bitcoin and you start seeing people's awareness pick up, and the beautiful part about it is no matter your, sometimes it matters, you know, a little bit, but majority of the time, no matter your political status, socioeconomic status, no matter where you are in the world, people will always ask the similar questions, because that's how early we are. And that's how, yeah, I wanted to paint the picture to everyone there. You know, it's not about how much money you make right now. It's about knowing what to do with it. You know, I gave my piece of how I go about buying Bitcoin, because, you know, I still Instacart. I still work. I still do certain things. And I told them up front, you know, I've messed up several Bitcoins, you know, and those Bitcoins are now, that accumulation is now over six figures. But the thing is to not give up on your creativity. Don't give up. Just go out there and buy as you can, you know, 10% here, 15% of what you make. This is what I do. This is not financial advice. And it's important. It was to allow people to see, you know, more importantly, the freedom in Bitcoin, that you don't have anyone blocking you from getting it. You don't have anybody telling you, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then, you know, the extra sauce on the end of it was actually seeing job opportunities. knowing that there's a way. Even the guy who came by and he said, you know, I was driving some ASIC miners to where he was like in the middle of Odessa. And then, you know, he didn't even know what he was dropping off. He went out in the middle of nowhere and he saw this thing. You know, like that also shows you how much massive opportunity there is. I think it was you who said, it was either you or someone else who was like, you know, during the gold rush, some people will go out there and try to go mine the gold. Other people were selling the picks and the shovels. You don't actually have to be a miner to make it in this industry.
Right.
But you just gotta know how to get your hands on some money, different money. Yep. But my thing about it was I came to you all because I said, you know, this is a disruptive space. It's a fintech space. So when you have those two together, you have a massive opportunity to earn a different income. And also at the very bare level, since it is so early, there's no real experience that people can knock you for. If you have the knowledge, you give yourself an opportunity. That was, you know, one of the greatest things that I saw, you know, in the questions that were asked. People were engaging, whether they were engaging with what I was saying or even at the very end when Viviana gave the demonstration of breaking down the miner. So it was a very, very great experience, and I'm glad to know that people are leaving changed and you know,
the neat thing about what you just said about it doesn't matter, you know, what socioeconomic you come from, doesn't matter. Bitcoin doesn't see your background, doesn't see race, doesn't see color, doesn't see any of that. The two guys I told you about, they're two sons, both. What was that? Did you see that?
I have no idea. That's the second time and it's something like that has happened.
Oh, I didn't see. I guess I didn't see it the first time. Balloons just came up. That's cute. It's audio, so I know they can't see it, but yeah. It was funny.
Because the first time it was a thumbs up with a bubble. I was trying to think, is this on Zoom? But I don't know. I have no idea what happened.
That's funny. Are people watching this?
No one is watching. They would. No one will be able to see what happened either, unless we drop it later on in life.
So the two sons, okay, their lives were crushed because their dads went to prison. Mm-hmm. So the breadwinner of their family was in prison. So they did not get everything they could have got. They didn't get everything a son who doesn't have a father going to prison, working and providing. They didn't get all that. They didn't get college. They didn't get university. They didn't get all that. But they got into Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and it allowed them to provide for themselves and even for their dads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I like about it is that, man, if you just learn a little bit and get involved, and they both decided to get involved in the day trading side, so they had to learn how to day trade, you know, but they saw the value in day trading Bitcoin, and, you know, they're both doing pretty good now, you know.
It's better than knocking folks over the head and having to go send a sale, so, you know. Absolutely. You just learn a little bit, and you take that knowledge, you know, and I really stress for people to learn, though, you know, learn. We have resources. We're putting together more resources, and there's a lot more resources out there. But just stick by and learn because, you know, it will definitely be beneficial the longer you do it. You know, the longer you do it, because the thing I always try to tell people, especially coming out of prison, you could be a grown man, grown woman, 35 years old, and you're only qualified to go flip burgers somewhere, and you got a manager who's 19 to 20. Like, what the hell? It doesn't even add up. And you're working for pennies. You're working for pennies truly because of inflation, because of how the money does not work. So something like Bitcoin, it gives you the opportunity to get, how do they say it? You get to save your labor. Your labor is appreciated over time as opposed to depreciating over time. And, you know, say you did 10 years, you do 4 years, and it's a possibility your number of Bitcoin can 100x from when you first started. Well, now, you know, what type of life can you live now? What type of things can you do now? What type of freedom do you get back because, you know, you're outside of, you know, the debt trap system that's been created here? I was just saying this to my fiance. You know, the GDP for America, I think, is like, what, $23 trillion or something. But the national debt is $34 trillion. Who's not in debt here? Like,
yeah.
this is a terrible scenario. So Bitcoin gives anybody that opportunity, and it especially gives those an opportunity. You know, let's say you might not be able to get a job in mining at the present rate that we want you to, but you're working, you know, and you're working, you're able to provide for yourself. Will you be able to save in Bitcoin a bit? And you can just see how it just continuously plays out. Nothing. And once you're in this space, you realize that nothing is impossible. And that's what I really wanted to get through to people. You know, no matter if you make $10 a day or whatever, nothing is impossible. You know, your $10.
Yeah. I mean, two of our guys, I told you before we started, two of our people, well, one was an actual resident, Steve, that was at the workshop. You know, he was talking to me at church yesterday, and I mean, I don't know when this will air, but he was talking to me at church, and he goes, "Hey, I'm trying to transfer some of my savings. I'm just, you know, going to kind of," he said, "I'm just going to put some of my savings account." He didn't do all of his savings account, but just a portion of his savings account. He goes, "I'm just going to put it in Bitcoin." I'm like, "Okay." So he's trying to transfer, and his bank was doing something weird. So I'm like, "All right, let's figure it out." Well, he got it at 11:40 a.m. right after church started. He said, "It's in there. I got Bitcoin," and it was $500, and that was just a portion of his savings. It wasn't all his savings, but and then today, 24 hours later, you know, it spiked a little.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, "Hey, look at how much money you've made off that $500 already." And then even at church, Dakota, the wife of one of our residents, who's getting back on her feet at the same time, she's like, "Hey, I did $10 yesterday, and I've already got this much money made off that $10. And it's just created some excitement, you know, because, you know, there's nothing else like it. There really isn't. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I've spent a lot of money on Ethereum and XRP as well. But now that I know the full story about Bitcoin, the history and where it's going and what it's projected to do, I'm almost, you know, I have to feel like I almost have to apologize to Bitcoin for spending all that money in Ethereum and XRP. You know, because, I mean, who knows what I would have now? I mean, you know, those are going up a little bit too, but they're not doing the same thing Bitcoin's doing. And they don't have the same future, the same, you know, the same, all that, at least from my opinion, I don't think so.
You know, it's all good, man. The more we go on here, everybody will start learning that thing to pay attention to is the Satoshis. You know, we didn't get into all that. We might do a follow-up at the Forgiven Felons, but I want to share this because we're about to come to time. Share this with anybody. You know, just because you see the price going up, this is a time to get excited. And again, I don't know what will happen with this price now, because Bitcoin is doing things we've never saw before. But say it does so happen to go down, that means the money that you were buying when it goes up, you get more Satoshis. And that's the most important. That's one of the most important times, because that's for me when I get excited, when I see the price tank terribly, because the money now goes further in Satoshis. And just tell everybody, hey, you know, we're going to keep building out this thing, and we might even be able to throw a course or two in the house, in the shed behind the house for some training.
There you go.
But, you know, as we come to close, I do want you to, you know, tell everybody what socials you're on, and also send me every link that documentary is on too, so that could be shared as well. But let everybody know where they can find you, J. Dan Gum, and, you know, we'll close it out.
Yeah. So forgivenfelons.org is the website. You can find most of information about us on the website. And but on social media, we're on Instagram at Forgiven Felons. We're on Facebook. We have my personal J. Dan Gum, but it's nicknamed Forgiven Felons. So even if you put in J. Dan Gum or Forgiven Felons on Facebook, you're going to find me and the page. We do have a separate Forgiven Felons organization page on Facebook. We're on Twitter or X, but I don't really mess
with
that.
Matter of fact, I just tagged y'all on there, man. I need a retweet. You don't even follow me. That's crazy.
Oh, on Twitter?
But you're on there. We got you on there, man.
I know, but I don't engage as much anymore on Twitter, except during Texas legal sessions, because then that's where all the politicians who are trying to create criminal justice negative reform bills are on there. And so, but I'll try to be more active on Twitter. But we're on LinkedIn, we're on Instagram, Facebook, but we're our YouTube channel at Forgiven Felon, no S, just Forgiven Felon. And that's where our video podcasts are. Mm-hmm. And but we're still on audio as well. And if you have a loved one in state prison, county jails, you know, and they got a Securus tablet, they can listen to our podcast and watch our podcast in prison. So,
yes, man, yeah, that's dope. That's dope. Everybody, everything Jay said would be in the show notes. And this documentary on Tubi, Roku, and YouTube. I gotta check that out myself. And I'll even throw our podcast link in there from your previous show.
And absolutely,
be on the lookout for another podcast with me on the background check in the near future. But this was great, man. I'm glad to have had you on, and we're going to keep this thing rolling. This isn't a one-time thing.
Yes, sir.
All right, have a good one.
All right, you too, man. Jeez.